Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hal. Today, we have Ross McAllister. He is the Managing Director of KPMG Vietnam and Cambodia for consulting, KPMG Consulting. He's also a member of the Executive Committee. Ross, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here today.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Hal. Good to be here.
Yes. Why don't we just lead off with a brief introduction from you about what you do at KPMG, who you are. I think our audience would love to know. And then we'll head into some rapid fire questions and then the main podcast show today. So start with an introduction.
Okay. So a little bit about me. So said Ross McAllister, and I'm the managing partner for our consulting business here, Vietnam, Cambodia. Also, the head of advisory. So what does that really mean? It means I look after all of our consulting offerings,
okay,
across that region. And been here for 7 years. It's my seventh year. And loving every moment of it.
Okay. We arrived in Vietnam the same time. It's also been seven years for not only me, but also the company. It's our seven-year anniversary.
Okay, well, there you go.
We arrived around the same time. Thank you for that, Ross. So we're just going to get into the questions here, rapid-fire questions first, so people get to know you a bit better. Then we'll get started. First question, there's no right or wrong answer, so just whatever comes up first.
Right.
What brought you to Asia in the first place?
The size, the scale, the opportunities that were available. And my first entry into Asia and doing business in Asia was in China.
So what keeps you here in Asia?
Too many things. I think just how dynamic the whole business environment is, the rapid pace of change, the fact that there's always something different, right? And every week you've got a story to tell, and I love that. So,
if you had to explain to a stranger what you did at KPMG, how would you do it?
You know, I think what we do is we look to help businesses build and sustain value. Right. And we do that either through the application of technology or through advisory work and things like this. So that's my kind of really short elevator pitch that I would offer.
What's been your biggest career achievement to date at KPMG Vietnam and Cambodia?
I mean, I'd like to think my biggest achievement to date is still yet to come. But here in Vietnam, I think it really was just starting our consulting business. So when I came to the firm, we were predominantly an audit, tax, deals business. Consulting was there, but very, very small, very, very young. So my role was to establish us to take market share and build out our business over several years. So I think the big achievement there is I would see us as number one, number two in all the sectors and solution areas that we play in, and I'm really proud of that.
What's your biggest career lesson that you'd like to pass on to our audience today?
Sometimes you got to just throw your heart out and run after it, right? And that's a Middle East saying. And take a few risks. And I think I've learned that. Hasn't always paid off. But if you want to be at the forefront of things and where things are happening, you have to take risks in your career. And I look back and I feel good that I've done that. Calculated risks, I must add.
As a good consultant would.
As a good consultant
suggest
does.
To its clients.
Exactly.
What are three qualities that KPMG looks for in new hires and new candidates?
You know, I think integrity. Having a can-do attitude is very, very important. And, you know, flexibility and being comfortable, being uncomfortable, if that makes sense,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Because as a consultant, you're often asked to do things and you have to get to grips with masses of information, client situations very, very quickly. So being a little bit uncomfortable is quite common.
Mm.
So being comfortable with that feeling is a very important quality for consultants who look to have a long career in professional services. And what we often find is those that perhaps can't adapt to that, really it isn't for them. And we find we typically those people will tend to head back to industry.
On a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
Okay, what would I be doing? I'm a big sports fan, and in particular, boxing, mixed martial arts. I've done that for a large part of my life. So typically, if I'm watching any of the live feeds from the US, it's around 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, right? So that was true of the last weekend in particular. So typically, that's what I'll be doing if I can.
In your 7 years, what has been your favorite Vietnamese word or phrase that you've learned?
Oh, and I really will struggle here. What is my favorite?
Mine is choi oi.
Right. Oh, choi oi. Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'll say that.
Okay. All right, very good. Thank you, Ross, for those quickfire questions. I think it gives people a snapshot of what you've been doing at KPMG, a little bit about you, and what to look forward to in today's podcast. So let's get started. You mentioned earlier you're the managing partner of KPMG Vietnam and Cambodia for the consulting arm, and it's been a growth area for KPMG. Mm. Let's start with how long you've been doing that practice in general and what it's like in the day-to-day for you as the managing partner.
Okay, so again, we sort of launched, if you will, truly the consulting business about 7 years. Mm. So over time, my role will have changed a lot. So when I first came here, I was the only partner. So part of my brief was to develop up-and-coming local staff to reach partner level, build out the practice in terms of the solutions and services that we offer. And of course, that's changed over time, right? Because there's a maturity thing here. So as time goes by, as people become more comfortable with consulting services, then we offer new services. So my role then was very much in as a business leader, as a subject matter expert in running a professional services consulting business. Mm. Over time, that's turned more towards a coach, a mentor, a leader, a manager of the day-to-day business as it's got bigger and bigger. So I think when I joined, we had around 50 or so people. We're now north of 300 or so within our consulting business. Wow. So my day-to-day life has changed quite a bit.
It sounds a bit like a startup journey. I mean, growing from 50 to 300, there comes a lot of HR, a lot of finance procedures, establishing clear values about who you want to hire.
Exactly.
And setting the tone for that, because the consulting arm, in a way, is a bit different from the other arms. It's probably a lot more solution-oriented rather than just services, I would say, as a former consultant myself.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you could even argue that although this is an emerging market, perhaps for consulting, it's really still a frontier market. Yep. So it was like a startup in terms of not just putting the sort of good hygiene factors around managing the finances, the processes, the operations, but also a great deal of market making and education and the things that we did. And that really characterized our formative years, developing that business, being out there marketing, understanding the climate here, how it might be different to other places that I've worked, understanding the sales cycles, all very, very different. So it is very much, I think, like a startup to get us where we are today.
I like what you mentioned about market making. Let's set the terms behind that a little bit, especially for a lot of people listening to today's podcast. They're in every sector imaginable, real estate to financial services to insurance. What areas do you oversee within consulting? I'm coming to Ross today, and I'm trying to understand what consulting can bring to my company.
Right.
So let's break it down a little bit. What are those main areas? And how do they relate to specific industry sectors like banking, let's say, or insurance?
Okay, so we have a broad spectrum business here, which often surprises people. So what you'd find in KPMG Vietnam and Cambodia consulting, you'll typically also find in our US business, our UK business, the much more mature practices. So that can cover a range of things. Half my people are focused on SI, systems integration, so technology. Then we'll offer our solutions around financial management, around people and change, HR, as you mentioned earlier, the customer, which is very, very important, operations, and of course, risk, right? Okay. Our risk consulting business, which again, is a large part of our business and also sits in support of the audit business that we have. In terms of sectors, then again, we'll be in all of the sectors here, but our primary sectors from a consulting perspective would be financial services, telecommunications, media, et cetera, right? Technology, industrial markets, so manufacturing, huge manufacturing base here. So we do a lot of work there. Mm. You know, and then within that, of course, you've got some common areas, which will be sector agnostic, but then you've got specific services, things like target operating models, which will be very, very specific to a particular industry.
Yeah.
Financial risk management, which is a large part of our business, which will focus specifically on financial services companies. Okay.
Let's take a step back a little bit too. We have you in the studio here today to hear about business transformation. And that's what consulting is at the end of the day. Transforming businesses to the next level, maybe risk management, systems integration. It runs the whole gamut, as you just shared. I also want to kind of break down the two areas of consulting that I see. So you've talked a lot about the strategic sense, everything from risk management to understanding the roadmap of a business, and you guys as consultants can lay out that strategy. But you also mentioned integration. That's a part of market making in Vietnam, because consultancy for most people abroad, especially in the US, the UK, you mentioned, a lot of it's strategic, and then it's up to the company then to implement. But here, market making in Vietnam for consulting is both, it sounds like, right? Maybe you can share a little bit about that and how that works in the Vietnam context.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what's very important here, and again, in a frontier market or an emerging market, more so than a mature market, is our firm's ability to actually make the advice that we give land. Okay, that's very important. So a large part of what we do is then holding our client's hand after we've delivered some advice and bringing it, implementing it, putting it into production. So that has implications for the type of people that you also have, right? So we tend to have a good mix of people, and I myself am a good example of this, who perhaps have 50% of their work experience has been in industry, the other 50% professional services, also having international experience. So we bring all of that. And we focus quite heavily on actually delivering the value post-implementation of the work that we do. So it's a big area.
I want to dive in that to a little bit as well, because in Vietnam, at least, why do you think the implementation part is so essential in the Vietnam context? Is it because a lot of these companies don't have the in-house ability to transform, and they're looking for that outside expertise to make it happen, especially in a speedy timeline? Because obviously hiring in-house talent in Vietnam, there's a huge war for talent right now, right? And it's not easy to hire everything from systems, technology integration teams to even the more non-technical stuff. So I'd love to hear your comment on that and take on it.
Well, you're spot on, right? And it's exactly that. You know, in a market like this, a lot of the companies that we will advise, many of the people in quite senior leadership positions don't necessarily have the track record or the experience of doing,
folks, and of
delivering major transformation type projects. They're less familiar with it. So particularly when the economy has been growing, it's often been very, very easy, right? It's only when that you're faced with difficult times that perhaps you think about transformation.
I think Vietnamese businesses are very proficient at building and growing, but transforming, that's another part of the whole game that a lot of companies are adapting to. Especially the bigger firms that have been used to enjoying large market share, but now they're, you know, maybe a little bit loose on the finances or not able to keep up with technology because of the war on talent, among other factors like AI, which we'll talk a little about later. I don't think anybody knows AI. We're all learning, right? So I'd like to also touch upon your experience here, Ross, which is hopefully reflective of your team as well, which is about you're a consultant, but you also have experience on the international business and IT side of things. Yeah. How does that influence consulting, the consulting business in Vietnam, those two specifically?
Yes, a large part of my career has been within industry. That's been partly driven by when I first moved to professional services, one of the partners who I worked for said, always remember, why should anybody be advised by you? And that kind of stuck with me.
You have to remind yourself every day.
Well, you have to be relevant. So being able to step out of consulting and go back into the line has characterized my career. So I've been very fortunate, very blessed, some may even say very lucky, to hold positions at CEO level, CIO level, COO level, and senior responsible officer for strategy. And that's really helped, because when I came to Vietnam, people like that practicality. They like to talk to someone who says, well, actually, when I was in your shoes, here's what I did. You know, so when I talk to you about transformation, I've sat in your chair. I've had to deliver it. So I know what the pitfalls are. I know what you need to do to get right. So I've lent on that a lot. And it's something I'm very, very proud of. And I say in markets like this, where people are very, very practical, they like to hear that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, just as a side note too, let's look at the talent market here, right? In Vietnam, we have 100 million people. That's big, but not that big. You look at India, which is 1.4, I think it's now. China's around the same. And you look at their talent pool, it's massive because they have these huge educational infrastructures, but also that pipeline.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny if you think about it this way. Let's look at a company like a Nestle.
Yeah.
It's everywhere, every single country in the world. I know the chairman here in Vietnam, Binu, he's an Indian guy from somewhere in India, but he's lived around the world, Switzerland, you name it. And the thing is, there's only one CEO of Nestle in India, as it would be here as well in Vietnam, only one CEO. But there's so much talent in India. And so they have to go outside of India to enjoy those same kind of experience, those kind of roles. And so as a result, in a place like Vietnam, there's just as many Nestle's of the world here in Vietnam than there in India, but not as many CEOs. So my question for you, Ross, would be, when do you think Vietnam will have those capabilities here? And are you and your team helping to train companies to instill that capability come in the future?
Yeah. You know, it's changing, and it's changed in the last 7 years since I've been here. So, you know, you would expect it the next 10 years to really see that mid-layer in particular of management talent really come out and develop.
Yep.
And I think what we try to do as a firm, when we talk about solutions, we talk about our offerings, we always build in quite a bit of training around that. And, you know, partly as an education, but partly also to make sure that what we put in place is sustainable after we've gone. There's another aspect to this, and I think that's executive training, which you don't see much of. And I've been talking recently to one of the big universities here about perhaps how we might actually address that. Because what we see is often a real lack of some of the soft, what I would call the softer skills, the strategic thinking, the management of change, right? The management of large-scale programs. But often people here will be more interested in, I want to understand M&A as an example, right? And these sort of things. So it's how do we tap into that? How do we make those up-and-coming sort of executives a little bit more aware?
Okay.
You know, we also do a lot as a firm around our next program, where we look at those startup businesses and we run a series of courses, if you will, or insights around different aspects, different functional aspects of business to help that startup community get some traction early on.
Love it. Okay, I'm personally interested. and I like your point about the executive coaching. I actually just got one myself, and she's been phenomenal.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm supposed to share that here, but I'll share her name later if you're curious. But I definitely agree. And as a newer entrepreneur on the scene, or newer leader for that matter, I definitely see that need here in Vietnam. Next, I want to talk about, since today's topic is about business transformation, is what does that transformation look like? And I'd like to hear about your thoughts of how that's applied in Vietnam, because I think businesses here, and I think you're no stranger to that too, have been very used to an abundant young talent pool, have been used to low-cost manufacturing and supply chains, but everyone's moving up in the value chain now. Wages are rising, supply chains are improving, but what that demands is also technology. And so we'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Ross. How do you see these new emerging technologies impacting how humans and companies work in Vietnam? I know it's a very broad question, but
it
start
is.
With that.
It is. Yeah, no, it's an interesting one, because if you think about it, you know, humans have been replacing humans with technology ever since the Industrial Revolution, right? So so there's nothing sort of new here. You know, I think there's a general awareness. You know, we get a lot of questions, we get a lot of ask about this, but perhaps still not so much acceptance of or understanding of how business might actually use AI, right? Now, if you think about it, then it's fast, it's accurate, right? And that's what it's good at. But there are certain qualities and capabilities that it has that are very different to that of humans, right? You know, we're emotional, we're intuitive, we're culturally sensitive, right? So, you know, I think you know, is AI in Vietnam going to be a silver bullet? Certainly not. You're still going to require a lot of human elements around that. Mm-hmm. You know, the skills of leadership, the skills of innovation, the skills of managing change, mm-hmm. right? And also being able to take a view around the ethical considerations of these things. So I do see it becoming a big part of our business moving forward. And again, we're doing education around that now. But I also think that you will see a nice harmony emerge. And I think I read an article recently in HBR where it talked about calling it the new diversity, right? So the humans and technology, AI, right, working together in sort of harmony. And I think you'll get that. I think technology is there to augment what humans do, not replace it.
A lot of the discussion today, from you especially, has been about not just the hard transformation topics, like what is M&A, what is this, what is that, but also the soft side of things, how to manage people and culture and thinking. Through everyone's limited experiences in the past 12 months, how have you and your team seen adoption at the more soft level within management teams, within companies, about these transformational technologies?
I mean, I think, yeah, look at it from two aspects here. If you look at KPMG as a firm, mm-hmm. then of course we're used to living with change,
yep.
right? You know, the people that we employ, we look for natural curiosity.
Mm.
So for us to look at how these technologies might be applied for the benefits of our clients,
it's exciting.
Quite natural. It's exciting,
yeah.
right? You know, it's something we have to control. Mm. I think the challenge comes when you go into the big wide world, and you touched on that about its mindset, right? And how do you change that mindset of people? And that's very, very difficult. I think myself, it's largely about leadership, right? And leaders setting the right example, showing the way, setting out the vision, being clear on the what, the why, what the benefits are, what the impact of these things is going to be. Mm. So that becomes very, very important. Then, of course, you need to think about how do you foster that right environment. And that can come through looking at innovation, developing an innovative climate within your company,
mm-hmm.
okay? It can come through training in those skills that are necessary, that go along hand in hand with those new technologies. But most important, I think it's about setting out that vision and making that clear to people why the change is necessary, mm-hmm. right? Because people will go through an emotional curve
right.
with anything like this, right? Mm-hmm. And they start by being very skeptical,
yep.
very threatened. Mm-hmm. So you need to take them on that journey. And that, I think, jumps back to the point I made earlier around the importance of managing change, right? The skills that are still required.
Okay.
So that becomes very, very important.
Great. Yeah. I rolled it out just to complete my side of the story. I rolled it out and there was resistance, but a lot of excitement too, but it took a few months.
Mm.
And from my experience, at least, it wasn't just telling people to do it. Cause I think that's a very top down approach. Yeah. It's like, hey, figure it out for yourself.
Mm.
Just study it for a little bit. You know, this is not, it's a little bit of homework, I'm guessing, but it's not like being assigned to you. It's not a requirement necessarily. And the adoption from there, slow but eventual, and now we use it every day.
So, and that's interesting. You hear about, you know, as you describe the culture there, because I think you've got to make the environment for people safe, right? So if you're going to introduce new technologies, then it has to be safe to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But then people will be prepared to learn, they'll be prepared to adopt. If they're told to do something, as you say, and it's top down, I think the natural inclination is, right, no good can come from this.
Yep.
I won't touch it.
Ross, I do have a follow-up here for you about this. It's still relatively early days when you talk about implementation of these projects and technologies for clients. How do you define success for these clients when you're thinking about the rollout? Is it about that adoption? Is it about the outcomes leading to more productivity? What is success defined within your team when projects are finished or ongoing?
Right. I mean, of course it can vary, right? Mm. Because the projects vary greatly and the industries vary greatly. And I think the key to all of this is at the very outset being very, very clear on what your objectives are, what your outcomes are. Mm. And those need to be measurable. And, you know, they can be a number of things. They can be financial KPIs. Mm-hmm. Okay, so return on investment, it can be around growth, it can be around cost and efficiency savings, right? It can also be around impacting your customer satisfaction, your staff ability to do certain things, okay? So what I would come back to is always having very, very clear KPIs defined mm-hmm. for the project. Mm-hmm. So success for us can vary greatly, mm-hmm. right? It can be entry into a new market for mm-hmm. the client. Success, right? Yep. It can be going live on a particular technology. Success. It can be the development of a people program, mm. okay, and seeing people into new roles and delivering new services to clients. So it can vary significantly.
Okay. I think a lot of these touch points we've gathered focus on larger businesses. Mm. But as you know, in Vietnam, 98% of the economy, it feels like, is sometimes small and medium businesses.
Yeah.
Not just the ones that we see on the streets and all of that, but also digital businesses, right? Mm. And companies under 100 people like mine. What do you have to share about to them when it comes to these kind of business transformations? Because it might seem overwhelming to them, costly, or maybe it isn't. what are your thoughts about
that? Yeah, no, and it's true, and it's a common issue that we face. And of course, you know, we often have our smaller clients wanting to embark on transformation, not knowing what to do or not having access to the necessary funds to do that. And what I always say is, you know, don't try and boil the ocean, right? You know, by all means, have a long-term plan, but break it down and keep it simple. And when you look at the things that you could do, you know, look at those things that are relatively low cost to implement, but offer high value, mm-hmm. or better still, free up resources.
Okay.
So that might be for a smaller business, let's say it's a manufacturing business, then perhaps starting your transformation by looking at getting control of your cash, you know, your treasury, your working capital, as well as perhaps looking at something like procurement, mm. okay, where quite possibly there are some significant savings to be made in a short space of time. Mm. So I've done projects like this before, even for relatively big companies where they were cash strapped. Mm. And I focus typically on those areas. Mm-hmm. Look to do things that are non-technology enabled, right, to start with. You know, you don't have a big investment up front, and free up those funds so that you have those funds to actually feed the rest of the program.
Right.
Now, sometimes this is a bit of a challenge because people always want to move so quickly, mm. right? And that's also where we have to say, well, look, you know, you need to make this sustainable. Mm-hmm. So the project, if it can, needs to fund itself as it goes along. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you another example of this as well. That did for a very big manufacturing client, mm-hmm. where we implemented alongside their transformation program, which was largely a top-down program. We looked at how we could implement something from the bottom up. How do we engage with the workforce? Now, this was actually a very big company, and at that time it employed over 200,000 people. Wow. So what we did as part of the transformation was we set off, you know, a training program around Lean Six Sigma, starting to get the staff on the ground floor more engaged with what was happening transformation-wise, but also develop skills that they could use in their day-to-day jobs. Mm. Now, this started off as a way of really just getting engagement for the program as a whole. But it transpired that those skills started to be put to good use, and people within the business started to find ways of stopping value leakage, improving efficiencies, cutting costs. And that small program that started off as something, a good thing to do as an employee engagement, mm-hmm. ended up funding half the long-term transformation
okay.
for a very, very big company. Mm. So you can see how these things, you can scale them down, mm. and you just have to move slowly and be very, very clear and break the program into a series of manageable plateaus. That becomes very important, right? Mm. So that as a small business, they know where they're heading in that first stage, and they know that there'll be value that will be accrued at that first stage. If they then decide to op out, they still have that value. Mm. But if they're comfortable, then they can move to the next phase. Mm. So it's what we call plateau planning.
Okay.
Okay. And that's, I think, in my experience, has been much more helpful for a small business mm. because they can see what they're going to get. it's within a reasonable time horizon and they can understand how much it's going to cost.
Okay. Yeah. That's a great, great saying. We're going to have to trademark it on this podcast. Thank you, Ross. One of my last questions, Vietcetera is all about inspiring stories, not just business, but all types of facets. And I understand KPMG has invested into sharing its own stories about clients and its own team. This is a video series called Make the Difference. Could you share about this and why you guys initiated it and what's the purpose behind this particular campaign?
Yeah, it's a very important campaign. I mean, and we see, I guess like most companies do, that it's the people, process, technology when you talk about transformation. Yeah. But where we think we really shine is around our people. And so the campaign is largely geared around that, around our people and the various solution sets that we've developed that we believe give us an edge, give our clients an acceleration into transformation. So a few of those, and I'll just mention them, is around Powered, Connected, Trusted, and Elevate. Okay. Those are our four main solution suites. And Powered looks at technology-enabled transformation. Connected is focused on joining up the front, middle, and back office. Trusted is around applying a risk lens, because the more that you transform digitally, the greater the likely breaches are from mm-hmm. security. Mm-hmm. And finally, Elevate, which is our deals to transformation. So that's taking a deal from its very early stage and how you go through the entire deal cycle and end up delivering the value that the deal was signed on in the first place, right? So we've done a lot to invest in those solution suites. But what we also say is it's about the people that we bring. Mm-hmm. And again, that links back to, I think, one of the points I made earlier, is that we look for a blend when we recruit people. We look for not just professional services experience, but we look for industry experience as well, as well as an international mindset.
Okay.
And that, I think, is really what this campaign is about. Oh, you know, phenomenal. It's that making the difference. It's the people that make the difference.
I've had to remind myself recently, too, about our values, about how we hire people. And that translates into the client and project work, too, right? If it starts, it all starts with the people. And I've had to remind myself. It gets a bit harder the more you scale.
Yeah.
At one point, we were quite sizable. We're now 65, which is still quite large.
Right.
And we've had to remind ourselves about how we started from day one and how we translate those principles to even when we're 100 people, for instance.
Yeah.
So I think those are really key messages.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing, Ross. I gave you a bit of a teaser about, and we're going into our last question now, by the way. So I always like to ask our guests a final question, which is, Ross, we have you on the show today because you're an expert about certain things. And we want to hear from you about what those are. Now, there's probably things that you're not an expert in. And my question for you is what those are, so that we can help on this podcast share little tidbits of information for you as a listener to improve your work. So perhaps there's an industry that perhaps you've never covered. I'm sure there's one at least out there, right? And perhaps you're pitching a new client and you're really trying to understand more about what that is. Are there any topics that you personally are very curious about? It could be something tongue-in-cheek too. It doesn't have to be so professional, that you would like to hear more about so that we can help serve you better as a listener on this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very good question. Mm-hmm. And I guess when you look at industries, you know, we do operate in most industries, mm-hmm. but one industry that we don't operate in, and I think will become quite big here, is the sport industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be something that I'd be keen to understand. Okay. How is the sport sector going to develop here? You know, Vietnam, huge football fans, that I do know.
Mm.
But there's lots of other sports in the world, right? And with such a large population, such a young population, you have to believe that sport is going to be a much bigger thing. So certainly that's something that I'd be keen to understand for those people who are involved in the sporting industry and how we might be able to help them.
Mm. Interesting. I'm very curious too. I'm a huge sports fan. Just offline, we were talking about sports just before this. Mm. He's a Chelsea fan. I'm an Arsenal fan.
Right. Okay. I should have known this before.
I know. Sorry. I didn't disclose that. But yeah, we follow sports at a global level, and I'm sure a lot of Vietnamese too. It's one of the biggest fan bases for Manchester United, for instance.
Yeah.
But what does that industry really look like here in Vietnam? And I don't think there are a lot of answers. I think there are a lot of questions, and hopefully this show and many other contents we make can help answer those. So hopefully soon, Ross.
Thank you.
And if you have any names, you can let me know after and we'll try to invite them. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in for another episode of Vietnam Innovators with Ross McAllister. He's the managing partner of KPMG Consulting here in Vietnam and Cambodia. If you'd like to work with him, speak with him, anything, we'll have his contact information, or his LinkedIn at least, in the information below. You can also reach out to KPMG anytime. I'm sure they'd love to hear from you and share more about what they're up to. Thank you so much, Ross.
Pleasure.
And
thank
see you next time.
Thank
All
you.
Right, see you guys. Bye-bye.
Insights illuminate better choices, allowing us to see differently and do more. With KPMG, you have the people and technologies to uncover insights and turn them into action. When we act on insight, with the right people by our side, opportunity is everywhere. Let insights reveal new opportunities.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.